Raising teenagers today has never been tougher. In our relativistic and postmodern world, many parents are scratching their heads as they attempt to determine just the right approach to the myriad of new and difficult issues facing today's teens. These are issues for which many of today's parents never had a blueprint for in days gone by. Navigating the teen years, that's today's topic on Licensed to Parent. Well, you've done it. You have found us once again on the Licensed to Parent broadcast. Licensed to Parent, of course, is the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in trouble located just north of Atlanta. Our goal, to bring what's happening inside the gates of Shepherd's Hill outside and to equip you as a parent with the tools you need to, well, hopefully, and with God's help, make it through the lifelong parenting process without the need of a residential program for your teen. In short, we want to do our best to put ourselves out of business. And Trace, as you know well, we are not short on business here. The teen years are a unique time, a very challenging time, really not only for the teenagers, but for the parents who are still responsible for them, right?
Well, you're exactly right, Rich. And especially in today's postmodern world, I really don't know who has it tougher, whether it's the kids or the parents. I've been fortunate. My kids grew up in a bit of a bubble here at Shepherd's Hill. But really, you know, when you think about it, do we really have any more bubbles today in America? Digital technology has become the seedy side of town to the confines of virtually everyone's home today.
Yeah.
And even the Amish are affected. I was flipping through the stations the other day and saw a show called The Amish Mafia. I didn't watch it, but I saw the advertising. And if we're not careful, guys like Al Capone, Jeffrey Dahmer, Jim Jones, Larry Flint, and Hugh Hefner, you know, they can be virtual regular guests even in the best of homes today.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that show, Trace, because joining us today is the president of the Amish Mafia.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I misread that. He's the president of Homeward. He's also the executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. His name, Dr. Jim Burns. He's also, by the way, the host of the radio program Homeward, which is heard on about 800 stations a day and via podcast at homeward.com. Jim speaks to literally thousands of people around the world each year. He's got resources in print now in over 25 languages. And by the way, some of those resources include the books Faith Conversations for Families, Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers, Closer, 52 Devotions to Draw Couples Together, Confident Parenting, The Purity Code, and Creating an Intimate Marriage. And Jim and his wife, Kathy, and their three daughters live in Southern California and, to the best of our knowledge, have absolutely nothing to do with any Amish crime syndicate.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on our broadcast. It's an honor to have you on. I know when I catch your broadcast occasionally, I just dazzled by how informative it is. Thank you again.
Well, Trace, great to be with you. Rich, great to be with you, and I love what you guys are doing. And you're right. The teen years are so different than when I was growing up. I actually last night went to the Angels Dodgers Major League Baseball game, and I ran into some of my friends. I grew up in Anaheim, but you know, the years where we grew up in the shadows of Disneyland were so different than what kids are going through today. Mm-hmm. When it comes to not just digital, but when it comes to almost all things that could be at risk. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough time to be a kid and maybe a tougher time to be a parent of a teen.
That's a good argument. Tell us a little bit about the ministry of Homeward for those who may not be familiar with it, how long you've been around and how our listeners can benefit from it.
Well, Homeward started 25 years ago. I was a youth pastor in a rather large church here in Southern California and speaking for an organization called Youth Specialties. We realized that kids needed people who could talk to them about more some of the at-risk issues like sexual promiscuity, mm-hmm. but from a God-honoring biblical worldview, drug and alcohol use and abuse. Just at that point, we were learning more about eating disorders, and kids were just beginning to cut. We didn't have the internet, but as it evolved, we had to train both youth workers and parents and speak to kids directly about this. And as time went on, we started moving more toward trying to help parents. So there was a season where I was probably speaking to about 250,000 kids a year, and just in my own personal ministry, it started to evolve more to say, you know what, I probably need to help these parents. Mm-hmm. We're helping these kids, and the parents are the
ones who
have obviously the most input. And Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the United States, probably around the world.
Wow.
We have 27 speakers just in the United States who put on parenting seminars in churches and various organizations, and trying to help parents get a handle on what's going on in this kind of crazy culture where really we've experienced the death of innocence over the last few decades. And I'm not sure that was the case when at least I was growing up in the shadows of Disneyland.
Right. Well, I like the title of your book, Teenology. The book is a must for anyone raising a teen today. Is that a term that you coined or title
or can we steal it freely without having to give any attribution?
I stole it. You could steal it. I was just thinking, the ology means the study of, and I just thought, I didn't want to make it sound too academic because it's not necessarily an academic book. We tried to make it as practical as possible, but I actually had been calling it Teenology and figured that the publisher would eventually change that name. Publisher loved the name. And so it's called Teenology, but it's just more or less the art of raising great teenagers and trying to figure out how to discern a really interesting, season.
Sure.
I say in the book that, the word teenager didn't even come into being until 1940.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. It was with the magazine Scientific American. it was somebody used that phrase and it picked up and there you go. Adolescence, the word adolescence was growing. But, we didn't even have high schools until the beginning of the 1904 or something like that, 1916 maybe. So, this is relatively new.
Right.
When you look at the history of the world, we weren't thinking about teenagers. My heavens, Mary, the mother of Jesus, was a teenager. So,
right.
I mean, just back then, you didn't think about it. You went from a childhood to adult. Today, you go from childhood to teenage years. And when I was doing my graduate work and whatnot, we define the teenage years as 13 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody does that any longer.
It
happens earlier and it stays later. And so we're, trying to get our arms around this crazy time of moving from dependence on mom and dad to independence. And right at the time when kids are going through this independence, they also have the freedom to experiment, and they experiment with some poor choices, and a lot of parents are just lost with this, and they never dreamed it would be their kids, if you would, who would make some unwise decisions or poor choices.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that the age that kids come into puberty and then where the frontal lobe is fully developed, that gap has really widened in the last century and even since 1980. So there's not just, we're not just imagining this. This is a biological phenomenon. And
it is. And so when you deal with talking to kids about healthy sexuality, it used to be that there was a certain age more around, 12 or 13. Well, by age 11, the American child has seen pornography most likely because that's the age when they first see it, probably on a pop-up or something, not always, on purpose, but they do see it. And because of the change in their, just in terms of when they do reach puberty, parents have to talk to their kids at a younger age.
Right.
And this is hard on parents because, I was in a room last weekend and there was probably thousands. Right? It's a church of about 7,000. I did a couple services. And I asked them, how many of you received positive, value-centered sex education when you were growing up? Well, six people in a probably a place that held maybe 2,500 people at a time. Six people, that was the record. That was the most.
Yeah.
Well, they probably also heard it later. Today, we've got to talk to our kids at an earlier age when it comes to sex education or any of the other issues we're talking about. But partly because all studies show, whether conservative or liberal, they still say the same thing, that the more positive sex education, drug education, things like that, that kids receive from home, the less promiscuous or the less involved in some of the at-risk behaviors.
Yeah.
But again, way too many kids are still getting the silent treatment. And for parents, they say, I can't talk to my 10.5-year-old, 11-year-old.
Better learn.
Well, if you don't, there's sure a lot of people who are and will. And they're going to the internet to get their info.
And it needs to be an ongoing conversation, too.
Oh, yeah, not just one time.
Yeah,
But that's a real challenge in a lot of ways, because as you say, the age is getting younger and younger. Well, you're now dealing with kids who conceptually cannot understand a lot of what may need to be discussed. We had Craig Gross on the program, the founder of XXX Church, a while back. And he was talking about, again, the concept that Trace just mentioned, that it really does have to be a conversation that happens over a period of time and again, because you're dealing with young people who at least need some basic information. I wanted to ask you, though, this is a cultural influence. It's because of culture's influence on our teens that we're facing these issues. But I think culture's influence not only our teens, but also how we as parents deal with our kids' teen years. I agree wholeheartedly when in your book you say that it's time to fight the culture. My question, though, is how can parents most effectively fight that fight?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think we've made a mistake. You know, I come from, you know, the Christian background where fight means sometimes to complain and not do much about it.
Right.
And we'll complain about what's going on in the culture and then not talk to our kids about these issues on that ongoing basis, you know, that Craig and others, you know, continue to talk about. And so, you know, for me, I say, I think one of the ways we fight the culture is, the culture is a huge influence, and we can't fight, in some ways, MTV, or we can't fight some of the, you know, we can't, you know, the internet's not going to go away, social media is not going to go away. But relationships, so when parents sit and have, you know, conversations, though they will be awkward. Notice I didn't say possibly be awkward.
Right.
They're going to be awkward. I mean, you know, I write books on this stuff, and, you know, with my, I have three daughters, and, you know, the conversations in the teen years were awkward if we were going to bring up some of these issues.
Sure.
You know, I'd get rolled eyes and, oh, dad, and those kind of things. But still, the way to, I think the way you fight it is to be the most important influence in your kids' lives in these areas.
That's right.
And that means parents are going to have to not preach, not lecture, but actually build a trustful relationship. And the earlier they start having these conversations,
well, that's exactly right. Unfortunately, a lot of parents don't want to take the time or the effort to learn their culture. You know, today's parents, I think one of their greatest disadvantages is the fact that they no longer have the culture on their side. When we were growing up, the culture backed up everything our parents, you know, whether you're a Christian or not, you pretty much raised your kids according to a Judeo-Christian ethic, and the culture affirmed that. Now, if you don't fight the culture and give a good cogent argument for why the whole world's basically messed up and you got it right, then you're kind of out to lunch. Yeah. This is really...
Well, you're exactly right. Yeah. My parents were not Christians per se, but they raised me with the strong same morals and values that we wanted to raise our kids. They weren't doing it from a biblical perspective. They were doing it from a more the dominant cultural norm of the day. And today, we're in the minority.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, we drive home in our parenting classes, we start with worldview. And because everything else is built upon that. But, you know, there used to be PSAs on TV, and maybe you remember when we were younger, do you know where your kids are? Which meant if you knew where they were physically, they're probably okay. Today, because of digital technology, even if you know where your kids are physically, they can still be engaging in as much sin and danger as if you didn't know where they were. What kind of heads up do you have for parents in this regard?
Well, it's actually not a popular view for with teens, but, you know, I think that parents need to be the, especially if they're paying for it and the teens are, you know, within the home, you know, they need to be the friends on any of the social networking that the kids are doing. They've got to, you know, I worry so much about Wi-Fi. I mean, I love Wi-Fi in my home, but at the same time, I worry about having a illustration boy in a room, they think he's doing homework for the, you know, for 4 hours. And, you know, there's a pretty good chance that he might be looking at some stuff that might not be as appropriate. So I think as parents, we have to take the responsibility to create media safe homes, whatever that means. You know, I've got a friend who I talk about in the book Teenology that they dock their phones at 9:30 at night, which, you know, with all teens. Mm-hmm. And so they have four teens and mom and dad, they have six phones. And at 9:30, they dock it. So if there was an emergency or they needed to do something, they go to the docking station, which is in the kitchen, but they don't let their kids after a certain time even have their phones there. And the kids are now used to it. It's not that big of a deal.
Sure.
But even him, he's the vice president at Azusa Pacific who deals with our ministry. We have a center over there. And, you know, he'll text me at 9:45 and I'll always write back and say, where are you? And he'll say, I'm right in my kitchen.
In the kitchen.
You know, just, but I think that's a neat idea because...
Yeah.
What we're seeing is a lot of that stuff that happens, you know, even teens have trouble today sleeping because if somebody texts them in the middle of the night, they're back, they're into it, or they're playing games.
Yeah.
I mean, things that aren't even that horrible, but they're playing a video game that's not a bad video game, but they're doing it at 2 in the morning.
Right.
And, so we've got to know what our kids are doing with their technology, just like in the old day you said, you know, where are they? Are they at so-and-so's house, or are they at the library, at the school, or whatever?
Yeah.
Today, it's one step farther.
Our guest today is Dr. Jim Burns, the president of Homeward, the executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific. And the book we're discussing today is Teenology, the Art of Raising Great Teenagers. You can find more about that at the Homeward website. homeward.com. We have to pause for a moment here on Licensed to Parent, but we'll be back with more conversation with our guest, Jim Burns, right after this. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face-to-face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting licensedtoparent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at licensedtoparent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org, helpmytroubledteen.org. Welcome back. This is Licensed to Parent, coming to you from Shepherd's Hill Academy, just north of Atlanta, a one-year residential program for teens in crisis. Our goal here, to put ourselves out of business by equipping you to be the kind of parent God intends you to be so that your kids never have to end up here. Our guest today, Dr. Jim Burns, we've been talking about how to raise great teens, how to be a parent who, I guess, does it all right. And if we ever get to that point, then we will all have a celebration, and you're invited, Trace.
Well, Jim, there's been a lot of criticism as to how we do church youth group today. What should parents be looking for in a healthy church youth group for their teenager?
Well, actually, I like a lot that's going on in youth ministry today. I think there's some things that aren't necessarily going. I don't like it when the youth group is, you know, in one part of the church in the basement and the family doesn't know anything about it. I like it better when a youth ministry has what we call a family-based youth ministry, which means that they're realizing that still the dominant force is a parent spiritually and that they're working together. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, the youth group's doing their thing and the parents are doing their thing, but, you know, that you actually work together. And I would look for a church that that has two things. One is that they have what I would call a family-based youth ministry. I wrote a book called Partnering with Parents in Youth Ministry, and it was for youth workers to learn how to, you know, partner with parents instead of just kind of ignore it. And then secondly, I would look for a group that where there's some real positive peer influence. You know, we always talk about negative peer pressure, but a youth group, the benefit of a youth group is positive peer influence. And I've seen kids come into youth groups who were pretty rough, and sure, they found there a safe place to be with kids like-minded, except kids who also love Jesus and we're trying to pursue Jesus. And, I mean, nobody's going to be perfect, just like when you mentioned the parents. I mean, we're not going to have that party because no parent feels that they've absolutely got it done, you know, perfectly. But, you know, I would say that's kind of a fresh breeze of the Spirit. I'm seeing a lot of churches care deeply for the parent relationship. Homeward, where I work, is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S., and so there's not a week that goes by where we're not coming alongside parents, and that's usually from the youth ministry and children's ministry. You know, they're the ones who kind of sponsor that. Yeah. I think that's great, and helping parents take the dominant lead, and then also, back to the kid thing. I mean, I can't say enough about positive peer influence. Kids are influenced by other kids, and so we don't want to take them out of that. They need to be around other kids who have a positive place. Where are you going to get that today?
Yeah.
Church is one of the dominant places they can find really positive, healthy, you know, peer influence.
I'm curious about one thing, getting back to this concept of the perfect parent or the perfect teen. Today, we are, I think, picking the wrong measuring sticks for determining how well we've done as a parent or how well our teens have done. It may be, well, gee, Junior got, you know, a 4.0 in school or something like that. But what do you feel would be the better measuring rod for determining how well a child has turned out, or for that matter, how well a parent has turned out?
Well, I think the hard part is we're not going to really be able to know until they're adults. Like I was talking about, you know, raising kids who become responsible adults. But I would say that for, at least for us, for Kathy and I, as we look at our kids, and they're now in their 20s, but you know, it was the mission, mate, master. Now, I'd love to have chosen what their mission and purpose was. I'd love to have chosen the mates. That's not going to happen. I can have influence, but I can't, you know, go choose it for them. And then also the master. So what that means to me is that a parent, if a parent is helping their young people know how to find purpose. You know, I have three daughters. They've all kind of found their purpose, but they did it in their 20s pretty much. You know, they went to Christian colleges and kind of figured it out partly in them. But the mission, the mate, how do they have relationships with the opposite sex, the type of people they're going to marry, who they're going to choose to, and then the master. You know, the, so many studies show that at least 85% of people in the United States make a decision for Christ before age 18, or they won't, frankly. Very few adult conversions. I wish there were more. And there are, and that's great, and but that's not the norm. And so how do we help our kids develop a thriving relationship with Christ on their own? And so those are, to me, are better measurements than if they got a 4.0, I hope they do, or if they got, became the, leader on the soccer team or music or whatever it might be. I think we put more of an emphasis as parents sometimes on the sports, student stuff than we actually do on character, faith issues. And I think that's one of the reasons why kids are leaving the church. You know, a fascinating study that says 65% of kids today leave the church after high school. But another study that's come out, in fact, two that have done the same study, two different places, come out and say that there is a 300% better chance that kids will stay in the church if they have faith conversations in the home.
That's right.
Now, the important thing is having faith conversations home. And again, that's not like lecture and preaching, but it's making it a part of their life, and it doesn't happen. So we're still dealing with this horrible thing that, you know, kids are fleeing the church.
Right. Well, Jim, generally speaking, why don't teens trust adults these days?
That's a great question. I'd like to figure that out myself. I think part of it is because teens want authenticity so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think adults sometimes try to do that. But, when a dad says, "I'm sorry," that brings trust if he shouted at his kid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, the truth is that sometimes we don't do that. I think kids are looking for authenticity. The Bible talks about integrity, where the man or woman of integrity walks securely. And I'm convinced their kids will walk securely when they see more integrity. Mm-hmm. So I think they can trust their parents, but I think their parents have to be people who of integrity themselves. I mean, the Bible is very clear in Deuteronomy, kind of the method of how the Orthodox Jews raised their kids, and it said, "Live it out and then impress it on your children." But it didn't just say, "Impress it on your children." It says, "You live it."
Yep. Exactly.
Like, we've got to do that. And when we do that, I think our kids will have trust. Again, it's not going to be perfect. Working with teens, you're going to bump into each other. It's just that's part of the job description.
That's right. Yep.
But I think the men or women who live with integrity are the ones who are going to do and be much more effective with
it.
I would say it would be important for us to train our children to live it out as well, because this trust issue really goes both ways. Teens may not trust adults, but adults don't really trust their teens either.
Right.
So if we can teach them to, don't just say it, do it, live out what you believe.
Well, you're right, Rich. And I remember something my daughter said. My oldest daughter was in a Christian college, and she wrote in the paper, she said, "I had to disown my parents' faith to own my own faith." Well, that was a tough season for us, because we didn't know that she was walking away from Jesus. She was in the church. She was actually in a leadership in a worship band. But at the same time, she had to learn to own her own faith. So when kids own their own faith and they begin to develop spiritual disciplines, and they begin to do that, they're going to do much, much better. And parents can help them enhance that. There's lots of ways they can do that.
Yeah.
Well, to the degree that we as parents can be allegiant to what God's already said about truth when it comes to parenting, our kids will see us as smarter the older they get and the older we get.
Is that so true?
Jim, what do you say to your 16-year-old son who wants to get a tattoo? Maybe it's a tattoo of a Bible verse. What do you say?
It's a great question. I was just at a sports game. I think every athletic person had that. I would say to them, as I said to my girls actually were interested in the tattoo world. And I said, hey, under our home, if you would get a tattoo, that's not available to you because it's part of our deal. When you become a responsible adult, if you want a piece of art that may be very different, you know, when you're 60, but yet you got it when you're, you know, 25, that's up to you.
Yeah.
But in our home, there's certain things that we're going to stand for and certain things that we're, you know, that aren't as big of a deal. But for us, no tattoo. We didn't let our kids do we had girls, so we pierced, you know, they pierced their ears.
Sure.
But, you know, tattoo and piercing for us was not satanic. It was just simply not going to happen on my watch in this home.
Yeah.
And I said to one of my daughters who in college, you know, talked about it, wanted to get a little Christian fish on her ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, I think you carry that around in your purse for about 2 years. It's a form of art. And if you still like that 2 years from now, you know, let's talk about it. And, you know, I think she carried it in her purse for about 9 days and changed her mind.
Jim, our time is about up for today, but to wrap it up, what would be maybe the most important thing on your mind that we parents here in 2014 need to do to really shore up most in our quest to bring teenagers to emotionally and spiritually healthy adulthood?
I think that parents have to stay engaged and understand that it's not going to be perfect. It is going to be messy, but when they stay engaged and when they do that with the help of our Savior, I believe that kids will get through it. I believe it's going to be bumpy for many, but I believe that they'll get through it and that they'll enjoy the fruit of their labor. And, you know, that scripture that says, train up a child in the way that they would go, they will return. Yeah. Not in the exact same manner, perhaps, but maybe even in a more effective manner. But parents can't give up on it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good word, Jim. I so appreciate you being with us today. God bless you and the work you're doing out there at Homeward.
Well, great. Well, thanks for what you guys do with Shepherd's Hill Academy as well.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today, the gentleman we've been speaking with, is the former president of the Amish Mafia. No, I'm just kidding. Dr. Jim Burns. He is the president of Homeward and the executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. Again, the book we've been talking about today is Teenology. Great title. It's subtitled The Art of Raising Great Teenagers, and you can find that on the Homeward website at homeward, HOMEWORD.com. And this is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. To learn more and to hear program archives, we invite you to visit us online at LicensedToParent.org. And for Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rossel. If this is your first time listening, we hope it won't be your last and that you'll be back with us again next time. And again, renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.